our 18th article of faith entitled The World to Come. We believe that the end of this world is approaching, that at the last day Christ will descend from heaven and raise the dead from the grave to final retribution, that a solemn separation will then take place, that the wicked will be adjudged to endless punishment and the righteous to endless joy, and that this judgment will fix forever the final state of men in heaven or hell on principles of righteousness. So our lesson today comes from the 25th chapter of Matthew, beginning with the 31st verse. And this is Jesus speaking, and he's talking about that day, beginning in the 31st verse. When the Son of Man shall come in his glory, and all the holy angels with him, then shall he sit upon the throne of his glory. Now, he's going to be speaking sort of in a parable here so that the people can understand what he's saying. And before him shall be gathered all nations, and he shall separate them one from another, as a shepherd divideth his sheep from the goats, and he shall set the sheep on the right hand, but the goats on the left. Then shall the king say unto them on his right hand, Come, ye blessed of my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. For I was a hunger, and you gave me meat. I was thirsty, and you gave me drink. I was a stranger, and you took me in. Naked, and you clothed me. I was sick, and you visited me. I was in prison, and you came unto me. Then shall the righteous answer him, saying, Lord, when saw we thee a hunger, and fed thee, or thirsty, and gave thee drink? When saw we thee a stranger, and took thee in, or naked, and clothed thee? Or when saw we thee sick, or in prison, and came unto thee? And the king shall answer and say unto them, Verily I say unto you, inasmuch as ye have done it unto one of the least of these, my brethren, you have done it unto me. Then shall he say also unto them on the left hand, Depart from me, ye cursed, into everlasting fire, prepared for the devil and his angels. For I was a hunger, and you gave me no meat. I was thirsty, and you gave me no drink. I was a stranger, and you took me not in. Naked, and you clothed me not. Sick, and in prison, and you visited me. Then shall they also answer him, saying, Lord, when saw we thee a hunger, or a thirst, or a stranger, or naked, or sick, or in prison, and did not minister unto thee? Then shall he answer them, saying, Verily I say unto you, inasmuch as ye did it not to one of the least of these, ye did it not to me. And these shall go away into everlasting punishment, but the righteous unto life eternal. Now, our beliefs are that we have an eternity waiting for us out there somewhere, wherever that might be. And Jesus was teaching the difference between the righteous and the unrighteous. And that's the only really class of people they are in God's eye, is the saved and the unsaved. And it makes no difference whether you're white, black, red, green. That doesn't make any difference. It doesn't make any difference if you're Jew or Gentile. That doesn't make any difference. It's whether you are saved or you're unsaved. And Jesus here is distinguishing between the two and how their lives have been led. The righteous are following after Jesus and his teachings, and the unrighteous have not followed after him and not done the things that he has instructed the whole world to do. that awaits the people that has inhabited the world from the beginning of time. There's going to be two places to go. You're either going to go to heaven, a place of bliss, or you're going to go to hell for an eternity of punishment that's really, to me, indescribable. Not only can I really not describe heaven, I can get it in my mind's eye of what I think heaven's going to be like, but I really have no clue whatsoever. But I can't even get it in my mind's eye of what hell is going to be like. But I know beyond a shadow of a doubt that that is a real place, because it's spoken of too many times in the scriptures. It's described several times, and it's a lesson that is to let us know that there's going to be a division one of these days between the people who have inhabited this world. There's going to be a great division. And as was described by Jesus in our lesson, he says, "And before him shall he gather all nations, and he shall separate them one from another. As a shepherd divideth his sheep from his goats, he shall set the sheep on his right hand and the goats on the left." There is going to be a visual difference between what is righteous and what is unrighteous. And this heaven is a place I think we as mortal beings should strive to search out and reach for, because the alternative to that is a forever and ever punishment in hell, which the Bible describes variously as a lake of fire, a dark place. You know, you just don't know how it's going to be. But heaven is going to be such a blissful place that we ought to strive beyond anything that we can do to attain that place. Or, if we have already reached that point, we need to be out here trying to draw others in, that they too may have the same opportunity that we have to get to this place. Because this is what we believe. We believe that there's a heaven, and we believe that there's a hell. Now, I spoke to someone several years ago, and he didn't believe that there was a hell, because he said that God is a loving God, if he would not punish anybody like that. Now, the argument against that is, well, God is really not sending them to hell. They're sending their own selves to hell because of their unbelief. God is pleading with them to come, to believe, and to serve him. And they're refusing to do that. And in their refusal, they are dooming themselves to an eternity of hell. And, you know, really, it really makes no difference if they don't believe it. That doesn't make it untrue. Just because you don't believe it doesn't mean it ain't there. And I would have to tell them, you better be awfully sure of your belief if you think there is no hell. You better make sure that there is, because I believe there is. Now, heaven and hell has been spoken of throughout the scriptures. Old Testament, New Testament. I mean, it's there. It's one of the principal teachings that you find in the scriptures. Is the heaven to gain and a hell to shun. And it's spoken throughout. And I was back there searching real quick, and I found it. King David in his time, which was 1,000 years before Christ was born, we read in Psalms about what I believe to be David coming under conviction and being saved. But we read here in 2 Samuel about his son that he had with Bathsheba. I'm not going to go into that story, everybody knows that. But the child got sick and died. And David had been mourning, and when the child died, David got up and cleaned himself up and put on his clothes. And he said, they questioned how come he was all of a sudden changed. He He was different. He wasn't sad anymore. And they questioned him, and he said, but now he is dead. In other words, he's gone. There's nothing else to be done. Wherefore should I fast? Or why? Can I bring him back again? I shall go to him, but he shall not return to me. You see, David believed that there was an afterlife, a place to go. And I believe in that place too. And I believe David was wrong. Because of his salvation, I believe David knew that someday, whenever that day would come, that he would be able to go. And he would. He said, I'll see him. He'll be there. So this eternity that we're talking about is a real place. And you know all the different religions of the world believe a world of different things. And one of the things that that people believe is this world is not going to be destroyed. That it's going to just be changed. Now I told you before about the Seventh-day Adventists that came that I talked with, and they had picked out their houses that they were going to live in after Jesus came back. And all of them had to be in Bellmead. I thought that was just strange that they picked these houses in Bellmead. And we can sit and laugh about that, but that's really sad. It really is. That people think, that people can even think along those lines. In 2 Peter, in the 3rd chapter, and the 10th verse. But the day of the Lord will come as a thief in the night, in the which the heavens shall pass away with a great noise. Now, understand this. Peter said that Jesus was going to come as a thief in the night. That means we're not going to know. We don't know when this is going to occur. You remember the scare everybody just came out of, that the world was going to end in December 21st, 2012 or something like that, and how people were preparing for that time. But it says here that the day of the Lord will come as a thief in the night, in the which the heavens shall pass away with a great noise, and the elements shall melt with fervent heat, the earth also and the works that are therein shall be burned up. Now this is a pretty vivid description of what's going to happen when the Lord comes. And it says here that the heavens are going to pass away with a great noise. In other words, this is going to be a calamity. Whatever's going to happen is going to be something that we have never experienced. And it's going to disappear with a violence that we can't even begin to describe. So there's nothing that's going to be left of this place. You know the people believe that in the millennium, a 1,000-year reign of Jesus on this earth. Well, the millennium, as it's referred to, is really, it's only spoken of once in the Bible. And you would think, if it was important enough that Jesus was going to come down here and rule the earth, that Jesus would have said something about it. And it's to give people another chance to clean the earth up, and to give the people another chance to come to Christ. And he's going to rule on this earth for 1,000 years. Now, this is not some play. No, this is some serious business that's going to happen, because God is not going to give us a do-over. We're not going to get messed it up the first time, we're going to get to do it again. We're not going to get a mulligan, for those of you who play golf. We're not going to get a mulligan and get to do it again. That's not what the Bible teaches. Now, it mentions the millennium, and I know I'm kind of scattered here, but this is just different thoughts that people have, and I'm telling you, it's not as difficult as what these people make it out to be. There's going to come a time when this world shall end. There's going to come a time of judgment, and that's going to be it. And there's not going to be any of this one religious organization believe there's an intermediate place to go to. And they believe that they can either pay money for the priest to pray them out of this place, purgatory, or they can pray themselves, try and get this person out. That just really complicates matters, and it makes the church a lot of money. But it really complicates the matter, because that's not what the Bible talks about. I'm not saying there's an intermediate place. Not at all. But anyway, get back to the millennium. In the 20th chapter of Revelation, it says, "And I saw an angel come down from heaven, having the key of the bottomless pit and a great chain in his hand, laid hold on the dragon, that old serpent, which is the devil and Satan, and bound him 1,000 years. Now, I'm going to tell you who I think that angel was. I think that was Jesus Christ himself. He has the power to chain the devil up and put him in prison and imprison him for 1,000 years. Now, I don't for a minute think that it's a literal prison. I don't think 1,000 years is a literal 1,000 years. The Bible is spread through with the things that I don't understand. But I don't think you can bank on it being in exactly 1,000 years, but I think you can bank on it being a time period. When Satan and his power was chained up, and he wasn't allowed to roam the earth freely and do the damage that he had done for so long. And I think this probably started when the church was founded, because even though it had some troubles, it didn't have near the troubles that it could have had Satan been loose. Because in the starting of the church, they had to spread across the whole world. Now, the trouble that the church faced through its early history was that when civil and ecclesiastical power are combined, as they were with Rome and the Catholic Church, when they are combined, there is no restraint put on Satan. But you look how God's church has grown for a period of time. Now, I believe we're in that time when Satan is bound up. I believe this is it. I don't believe it's going to be when Jesus comes back. I don't believe that. I believe we're living in that time now. That his power is not as far-reaching as it once was. Now, it says that he's going to be loose for a season. And I think that's coming a time where he probably will be loose for a season. And times will be hard for God's people. But God's people will always be here somewhere on this earth. And they'll be worshiping him and not Satan at all. And I'm not going to tell you that I understand everything that Revelation has to say. Because I don't. I don't understand it. It says, he cast him into the bottomless pit, shut him up, set a seal upon him that he should deceive the nations no more till 1,000 years should be fulfilled, and after that he must be loosed a little season. Now, I'm not so sure that he had been loosed a little season. I'm not so sure we're not living in that time. Because you look around at all the things that are happening to this nation. This nation, which I feel was established by the power of God, by his will, I believe this nation was established. And look how his church was allowed to grow. We're allowed this morning to come in here and serve him and not be afraid of political backlash. We shouldn't be afraid of people storming the doors out there and trying to shut us down, because this country was established on the freedom of religion, and I think it was established by the grace of God. That he provided a nation for his church. Satan was bound up in this prison. His His power was hindered. And God placed His church in this nation that it was, could grow and could go out and be unfettered and not bound by government or restrictions as has been so prevalent in the past. And we find that when it was, as I was talking about the civil and ecclesiastical powers, you know that when Rome and the Catholic Church were tied hand in hand, you know when, or not Rome and the Catholic Church, but the Catholic Church in Italy and the Catholic Church in Germany and the Catholic Church in Spain, when they were tied hand in hand, persecutions run rampant amongst God's people. They had to hide in caves. We know the history of this. They had to hide in caves. And thousands upon millions were put to death because of Satan and the power that he had. Look at us today. Something happened. There's been a power shift. Satan has been restricted in what he has to do. And we've been allowed to what? For the first time in what? 1,000 years, we've been able to meet and worship and serve Him wherever we want to and however manner we so desire. I see that sort of slipping away. I see that sort of changing a little bit. Now, we still have our freedom, but I can't guarantee how much longer that freedom is going to last. The United States was once a majority of Christians. I don't know if that's true anymore. You know, it's actually going another direction. So, it said that Satan was going to be loose this small season. Well, I think maybe we're in the beginning, or maybe we're in that small season. But one thing we have to hang our hope on, and that is that God is still in the throne. Amen. He's still there looking down upon His people. He is still saving souls today. And He is still building mansions there in heaven. That's what Jesus said He was going to go do. He's going to go build us. He's going to make us a place. And I think that's still being accomplished. And one of these days, this is all going to be over with. And it won't matter anymore. Because we'll be separated. And we won't care. And I know this sounds hard, but we won't care about the goats over there on the left because God is going to wrap us in His loving arms and He's going to carry us to heaven. Amen. And that's where we're going to be for the whole eternity. And I was reading, and I don't know that I can find it right now or not, but it said there'll be no tears shed there. There'll be no grief. There'll be no sorrow. We can't imagine, really, can we? We can't imagine a world like that. Paul said, "For this we say unto you by the word of the Lord, that we which are alive and remain unto the coming of the Lord shall not prevent them which are asleep." In other words, we shall not precede them. Now there was people that were worried about the resurrection. They were worried about the dead, that what was going to happen to the dead. And Paul said, "We're not worried about that," because he said, "Those that are asleep are those that which are alive and remain until the coming of the Lord shall not prevent or precede them which are asleep. For the Lord Himself shall descend from heaven with a shout and the voice of the archangel and with the trump of God, and the dead in Christ shall rise first." We're looking at the sequence of what's going to happen here. He said the dead is going to rise first. "Then we which are alive and remain shall be caught up." We which remain and are alive shall be caught up. Now, you see, they say Jesus is going to come back and set up His throne here on earth. This right here says, "Then we which are alive and remain shall be caught up together with them in the clouds to meet the Lord in the air." It doesn't even say Jesus is ever going to feed, is ever going to sit on this earth again. Amen. It says right here, just as plain as day, that we're going to be called up, and we're going to meet him up in the clouds to meet the Lord in the air. And so shall we ever be with the Lord. Well, if we're ever going to be with the Lord in the air, and it doesn't say anything about him setting foot upon this earth, he is not coming down here to set up a kingdom. There's not going to be no do-over. We're going to go to heaven. That's what we believe. Now, I'm out of time. Let me tell you this. You wonder why I talk so much about this kingdom on earth, maybe. A preacher friend of mine went to pastor a church. And the deacons got to him after he was elected. He was going to preach his first sermon. And the deacons got to him and said, our advice to you would be, don't preach about the millennium. Because we have a bunch in this church. This is our church. This is us. This is our people. Says we have a bunch that believe in the millennium. That the Lord's going to come and set up the kingdom. I don't remember if he ever said that he preached on the millennium. But part of my point is that there's people that believe that Jesus is going to come up. I mean, it's not just these outsiders. It's not just there's some people in our own church that believe that. That's why I'm stressing the point this morning. There is no way that Jesus is going to come back and set up another kingdom. First of all, common sense, I would say, if he was, I think he would have mentioned it. I think he would have said it to me when he went away. You know, he would have said, well, you know, I'll be back and I'll be here with you again. He never said that. He said they would meet again.
He's a week after.
Yes, that's right. That's exactly right. So, that's our belief. Article 18 of the church manual says we believe in heaven. I don't believe in purgatory. I don't believe that we're going to be here, or Jesus is going to be here 1,000 years before anything happens. I believe from that time to come, it's going to be like Peter said, this world is going to be dissolved. Now, first of all, we're going to be called up. I mean, we're not going to see any of that tribulation. We're not going to see this world. We're going to be called up. Sometime or another, we're going to hear this racket, and we're going to see the dead rising. Now, what do you think about that? We're going to see the dead. It said they come from the ocean. They come from the land. They come from they come from everywhere. The dead is going to rise. Now, hang on, because the next thing he's going to do is you're going up. And won't that be a wonderful, glorious day? Now, think about that and kind of chuckle, because I know there's some people here that are a little skittish, and if something like a dead person rises real quick, it's going to scare her to death. But hang in there, because it ain't going to be too much longer that you're going up with them. Now, that's the sequence that's given here. The dead's going to be the first to rise, and then those that are alive, we're going up to meet you. And I tell you, it's going to be a wonderful day. Because we're going home is where we're going. It says the angels. This is going to be found in the 13th chapter of Matthew. It said the angels will come down. And they must be thousands and thousands of angels. It says the angels will come down and help divide the righteous from the unrighteous. They're going to be here. And you know, then I believe we'll be able to see them. I told you about the preacher in West Tennessee that saw the angels as he was dying. And that touches me every time I think about it, because I believe it with all my heart that there are angels watching over us today, but we can't see them. But one day, we're going to be able to see them. We're going to look at them in a heavenly spiritual eye that's going to reveal them to us. And I believe there's just thousands and thousands around, ready and able to do God's will. And they're going to help us. They're going to separate us up. They're going to help us up into the air to meet Jesus Christ. And then wherever heaven is, you know, I don't have a clue where heaven is. I really not worried about that. You know, everybody points up that that's heaven, and that, and the scriptures refer to the atmosphere as heaven, but I don't know if that's, I don't know. Worry about it. Don't have any idea. Maybe in a parallel universe. I don't really know. He's there. That's right. But wherever we're going, it doesn't matter, because we're going to be with God, and we're going to be with Jesus, and we're going to see all the saints. Well, we're going to see David, because David knew he was going there. And I'll tell you this, I know that I'm going there. I know beyond a shadow of doubt that I'm going to be there. When that time comes, I'm going to be a part of this eternity. And I can tell you without a shadow of doubt, I'm going to be on the right hand. Now, he may not be proud of all the things I've done. And I'm sure he's not. Because unlike Paul, I cannot say I fought a good fight. I can't say that. I'd be ashamed to say that myself. But one thing I know, I'm going to still be on the right. I may be at the far end, the furthest away from it, but I'm going to be on the right. That's where I'm going to be. And I thank God that when I was 7 years old, he looked down upon me and he saved my soul. I thank him for that. Because it makes me a good part of this eternity. Eternity has no time. You can't say we're going to be there forever. Forever is, that's nothing. Forever is nothing. Eternity, there, you don't know what time is. You don't know what. We may not understand eternity, but, I mean, forever. We certainly don't understand eternity. However long it is. That's all. I don't know. From way out of time. Anybody have anything to say?
I would like to understand what this battle near the rain is. I've heard about that all my life. I never understood it, and I believe like you put it. There ain't no such thing as a battle near the rain. I just millennial, I didn't understand it either.
Still, well, millennium, that's just 1,000 years. That's all that. That's all that's referencing. But I don't understand it all. I guess so. I mean, but you know, I don't worry about it too much, because that's not the only thing I don't understand. It's just one meaning that I don't understand. And you can read study Bibles, and so I was studying in a Bible that said he was all for millennium reign. You just kind of have to throw that out. You just have to kind of scratch through that and say, I don't believe that. But what other things he had to say about the resurrection was really interesting. But the thing about it is, it's not difficult, brothers and sisters. It's just salvation. It's for all. And one of these days, we're going to take that salvation with us, and we're going to go meet him in class. That's not difficult. And anyway, we're not doing it. He's doing it. He's got us all under handle it. He's taking control of it. We don't have to worry about it. You know, we don't have a schedule to meet. We don't have that. God is taking care of it. We just have to wait on him and be ready. Scriptures say we need to be ready. All right.
I was going to say, how a lot of that got started is there were those men that wrote these Bibles that put all their thoughts of what it was going to be, and people studied those, followed those scriptures and went through those things, and instead of reading the Bible for what the Bible was for, they read to me.
Right.
And that's how this all got broken.
Right. It is. Anyone else? Jimmy, would you just mention something?